Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to our Standing Watch program. As I record this program, it is being recorded one day after the final presidential debate here in the United States. It happened on October 22, 2012. And what is interesting is that that debate took place exactly 50 years after the very decisive address of John F. Kennedy pertaining to the Cuban Missile Crisis, which happened, of course, as you know, October 22, 1962. And of course, the debate yesterday had to do with foreign policy. And I couldn't help but making comparisons between what America did and stood for in 1962 and what the candidates represented last night. And I wasn't the only one who saw a dramatic shift. Other newspapers and magazine articles and authors pointed out the same thing. I'd like to read a few excerpts from articles which appeared and were published in the international press. Here's an article by Der Spiegel Online, dated October 23, saying this: "The U.S. faces many pressing issues in the near future, but none of them got much airtime on Monday night in the debate between President Barack Obama and his challenger, Mitt Romney. Instead, the two candidates reveal a global power on the decline. Americans no longer want their country to be a global police force. Neither Obama nor Romney have shown a real interest in the Muslim world. Both candidates want to continue using drones unhindered. Both Obama on the left and Romney on the right are focused on winning the subject of a public that is tired of war, a public that is largely united in the wish to reconstruct their own country rather than nations abroad. That is understandable for a country in crisis, but it's also a crisis for a great nation." So they are looking for support from those people, knowing that they are not interested in foreign policy. Deutsche Welle agreed, writing this on October 23. "But the debate also made something else clear. Foreign and security policy are not the issues which interest the voters, and both sides know that. In a Gallup poll in October, 37% of Americans said that the economy was the country's most urgent problem, and 26% said it was unemployment, which currently stands at 7.8%. After those two came the budget deficit and general dissatisfaction with the government. Foreign policy issues came way down the list." And then it says the new president will have his hands full reducing the record government deficit, the public debt, and unemployment. Foreign policy will have to take a back seat. Now, why is that important? It is important because a vacuum is going to be created, and this vacuum is going to be filled, but not by the United States of America, who are not interested any longer in foreign policy issues. And while both candidates praised the developments of the Arab Spring as something which was just great and democracy was being brought to those countries, and I'm sitting there shaking my head and saying, well, don't these individuals, those gentlemen, don't understand what's going on over there? Here's an article by FP Foreign Policy from October 20 about Egypt. Now listen to this closely, and then you tell me how successful the Arab Spring was insofar as, let's say, Egypt is concerned in relationship to the Western world, and especially the United States of America. 87% of respondents want Egypt to have its own nuclear bomb. 74% said that they disapprove of Egypt having diplomatic relations with Israel, an increase from 26% in August 2009. 77% agreed that the peace treaty with Israel is no longer useful and should be dissolved. American politicians fared poorly in the poll, but among them, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was the most popular at 25% favorability. President Barack Obama scored 16%, and Republican nominee Mitt Romney only 8%. Ahmadinejad's favorability rating, 43%. As do you think that President Barack Obama is more on the side of Arabs or more on the side of Israel? 68% said Israel, and 60% said that Obama's presidency had been a negative thing for the Arab world. So much for the great developments of the Arab Spring. But We've also heard a lot in the debate last night about how important it was to get rid of Gaddafi, and he had much American blood in his hands. But I believe you probably haven't heard the other side of the coin, which I'm going to tell you now. Deutsche Welle wrote on October 20, Gaddafi was a welcome financier of the African economy. Libyan investments are scattered across the continent. Libyan investment in Africa is now a thing of the past. Libya is broke. The oil industry has virtually collapsed, and the security situation there is extremely poor. For many African countries, Gaddafi's death was a loss in economic terms. It is unclear what is going to happen to all the companies, hotels, and plantations. Many African leaders are wary of the new Libyan government. So far, the terrible, tremendous success of the Arab Spring, even when it comes to Libya and the African nations. What about Syria? What about Lebanon? We all heard about the assassination, the murder of the very prominent Lebanese official. The Süddeutsche Zeitung wrote this: the murder of Lebanese intelligence chief Wissam al-Hassan removes one of Assad's most effective opponents in Beirut. Those wanting to trigger an eruption in an already wobbly country could not have found a better target. The Financial Times Deutschland wrote, for a deeply divided Lebanon, the coming days may prove decisive as to whether the country will be pulled into the Syrian conflict. It would be an escalation that could force the West to become more involved in the Syrian civil war than it wants to, because Israel would be placed in even greater danger. And then you have this article by the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung saying this: Syria's civil war is jumping the borders in an increasingly threatening manner. Turkey already has its army on high alert, and Israel practiced defense measures on Sunday. So far, the success of the Arab Spring, insofar as the ongoing civil war of Syria is concerned, which now may have other repercussions for other countries and other nations. As I said, there is a vacuum created. The vacuum, basically due to the disfavor of the American people when it comes to foreign policy, the disinterest. And it's going to be filled, this vacuum. And we have told you for years, it's going to be filled by a United States of Europe under German leadership. As I will show you in a moment, the Bible makes this very clear. But first, let me show you how much a leader Germany has already become in Europe. Here's an article by the Financial Times, which was written on October 22. Berlin is increasingly the de facto capital of the EU. Of course, the EU's main institutions, the Commission and the Council, are still based in Brussels. But the key decisions are increasingly made in Berlin. Will Greece have to leave the euro? Ultimately, it will be Germany's call. Will politicians support further bailouts for Southern Europe? The vital debates will take place in the Bundestag in Berlin, not in the European Parliament. Who does the International Monetary Fund call about the euro crisis? The most important conversations take place with the German Parliament and the European Central Bank in Frankfurt, not the European Commission. This shift in power from Brussels to Berlin has been accelerated by the euro crisis. Naturally, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel still has to go to summits in Brussels and strike deals. She was there only last week. But the euro crisis means that Mrs. Merkel is now incomparably the most important leader at the table. For different reasons, the leaders of all the other big EU nations arrive in Brussels in a weak position. Then they talk about Spain, they talk about Italy, they talk about Poland, and they talk about France. And they say that France is not in a position any longer to lead. And they say the relative economic strength of Germany could prove decisive, particularly if, as many in Berlin suspect, France is heading for a profound economic crisis. It is without any question Germany who is going to lead, at least let's say, core Europe, a group of 10 nations led by Germany, who then will give their power to a charismatic leader called the Beast in the book of Revelation. but also called the king of the north in a very interesting prophecy in the book of Daniel. Most of you know that the book of Daniel contains many end-time prophecies, and one of those is described in Daniel chapter 11. Let me just tell you a few things about this prophecy, because it's talking about a leader of the revived ancient Roman Empire, that final leader called the Beast, called here the King of the North, and many biblical scholars recognize that. And this final leader of a revised Roman Empire in Europe will do this, according to the book of Daniel chapter 11. He shall enter the countries, it says, overwhelm them, and pass through. Verse 41, it says, he shall also enter the glorious lands, and many countries shall be overthrown. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. We see a conquering power. Now, I know that this is not popular to say these days, where everybody is crying for peace, hoping for peace, wishing for peace, but a United States of Europe under German leadership will invade the Promised Land. The Bible makes this very clear. Now, perhaps under the pretense of peace, but it's going to happen. And America won't play any role, because they have allowed to create the vacuum which is going to be filled by the United States of Europe. We have published a new booklet, Middle Eastern and African Nations and Bible Prophecy. I would strongly encourage you to read it. You can find it on our website. You can also ask for a hard copy. It goes into prophetic events which are going to take place in the near future about countries like Syria, Egypt, Iran, Ethiopia, Turkey, and other countries. And you need to know about them if you want to understand what the future holds. It's a vital booklet. You should read it. Because what we are seeing right now is in direct fulfillment of prophetic events which the Bible has talked about for thousands of years. So thank you very much for listening. This is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program.